Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? How are you?
I'm freaking fantastic.
Welcome to season 3 of Tech It to the Limit. Can you believe it?
I can, actually, because we are awesome and we also have a platonic love relationship. Like, we are committed to making this partnership work.
I am committed to you. I hereby announce it publicly. But, like, we are awesome because not every podcaster gets to season 3, do they?
No. In fact, if you look at the semi-recent data that took us 20 minutes to locate on the interwebs, according to Amplify Media, of the 1.4 million podcasts published in 2022, only 32% published 10 or more episodes. So congrats on being in the top third of podcasts right out of the gates, crushing it compared to the prior year. Also interesting is that just 8% of podcasts have been updated in the past 30 days. 8%. So, yeah.
8%. And we do it on the regular, yo.
We do, yo. Also found it really interesting, according to Statista, which is a little bit more current data from 2024, that 70 million Americans listened to podcasts in 2023. And that number is projected to grow to 110 million listeners by 2029. So just 4 years from now. Also really interesting that among 12 to 34 year olds, half of them listen to a podcast at least monthly.
Yeah. Because it's a great medium, even for the youngins. Although, if I remember reading it correctly, like, the plurality of listeners are millennials. So, nailed it. Nailed the vibe.
Yes. Elder millennials, to be most specific. Anyway, listeners, if you happen to find more current data than 2022 on pod industry stats, please share with us that information on our LinkedIn page because we are dying for some evidence.
Yeah. Yeah, let us know if we're missing something.
How amazing we are aside. Let's set that aside and let's talk about how amazing you are and how you manage to make time for your family, your work, and growing your already above average brain size. So where are you headed? In the near future. Yes, I know, right? I can see it growing.
Well, you know, so JP Morgan just kicked off, you know, the conference season this year outside of CES. And that's kind of not really my bag. But, you know, the big flashy conference season's kind of getting started in about like a week and a half at Vive down in Nashville. So I'm headed down there. I'm really excited about that. I'm going to catch up with a bunch of old friends and chit chat about the industry. I'm sort of looking forward to hearing leaders from major health systems about how they're connecting the digitally transformative dots, right? I spent all of 2024 working around smart hospital systems, and now I'm kind of interested in smart health systems rather than just hospitals.
I believe the buzzword is learning health systems, Elliot.
Oh, a learning health system? Is that the buzzword? I should know that going in. Thanks for that tidbit. But like, they've got leaders from HCA, Cleveland Clinic, Common Spirit, Houston Methodist, Northwell Geisinger, Mayo Clinic will be there. John Halamka is one of the main speakers as well. So looking forward to hearing the various different speakers from health systems kind of, like I said, connect those dots. I want to know, how are we connecting the through line of experience for patients?
What are some of the sessions you plan to attend?
So, first of all, am I looking forward to being in Nashville? No. But listen, you have not lived until you've tried to use an electric scooter for the first time going uphill from Broadway at 3 a.m. while completely inebriated. I mean, watch somebody try and use an electric scooter.
Oh, wait, I was going to say, you have firsthand knowledge of this experience, Elliot?
One day I'll tell you the story of how I learned to use the scooter share apps in Nashville.
I can't wait. Sounds like a great faux-mercial opportunity.
All of that aside, it is in Nashville. They have a great marketing team. I love some of the sessions that they've got planned, like ground control to major efficiency. Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Governance in digital health.
Yes. Sporty Spice.
Right? And then I saw their quality metrics. Now I'm a believer.
Now I'm a believer.
Prior authorization. Hi, it's me. I'm the problem.
Oh,
it's
my God. Me. Yes. Taylor Swift reference. The only thing that makes PA better. Or automation. Or policy reform.
Or automation. That might have a bigger ROI. So they have really clever marketing. I'm really excited to kind of hear that. But mostly I'm kind of looking forward to what people think the world's going to look like by the end of this year, because I think there's going to be a lot of change coming our way in the healthcare industry. But you, what are you kind of excited? You got anything you're excited about?
I'm excited about our guests today. Actually pumped that we're kicking off season 3 with a 1-2 punch. So we're going to welcome back to the show Mr. Ed Marks, CEO of Marks Strategy, and his BFF, Chris Ross.
They really are like BFFs.
I know. Like, do you remember like when Obama and Biden used to walk around with those like twinning aviators? Like, they were just so chummy. And like, I miss that energy.
Yeah.
And Chris and Ed are much the same. They're here to talk about their new book, Diagnosed, which explores the multiplicity of being a chief information officer at a major healthcare system. Not a major one, a world famous one. And also a cancer patient attempting to navigate these very systems that Chris and Ed helped to fashion. So talk about taking a dose of your own medicine. We're stoked to have Chris and Ed on the show. And I think it's a great season opener for Tech It to the Limit 3.
Season 3, baby. Can't wait to get started. But we're going to get started with a new game, which we're excited to play to kick things off.
Well, I'm excited to quiz you on how well you know our guests, Elliot. But more to come, more to come.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh. I'm in the hot seat. All right, folks, stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of playing whack-a-mole with the healthcare system? You know, calling your insurance only to be transferred 14 times, getting accidentally billed for a service you didn't even know existed? Or hearing, "We'll call you back," and then waiting longer than it took dinosaurs to evolve into birds? Introducing RoboAdvocate 3000, the care companion who shreds red tape, slays wait times, and takes no prisoners. RoboAdvocate is your AI-powered healthcare wingman, armed with razor-sharp algorithms and a relentless commitment to getting shite done. Need an appointment with a specialist who's booked until next century? RoboAdvocate will find an opening faster than you can say, "Is there a wait list?" Need a prior authorization for your miracle drug? Handled. Mysterious changes on your bill? Annihilated. Confused about your care plan? RoboAdvocate will translate medical jargon into straight talk and make sure you understand it before your next colonoscopy prep. Facing delays in care? This robot knows how to demand action better than your loudest relative at a holiday dinner. Call 1-800-WINGMAN or visit RoboAdvocate.3000 today. Use promo code NOPRISONERS for 50% off your first monthly subscription. RoboAdvocate, where no means try harder. RoboAdvocate 3000 cannot perform actual miracles, like making insurance affordable or turning 3-hour hold times into EDM raves. Results may vary, but sarcasm and intimidation is always free of charge.
No. Welcome back to Tech to the Limit, folks. We got so excited for our guests for episode one of season three that we decided our game this episode is going to be all about them. We're just going to celebrate our amazing guests here on Tech to the Limit. So, Sarah, tell us about the game that we are playing today.
Hey, this is super simple. Even you can keep up, Elliot. Both Chris and Ed, as our audience knows, are former CIOs, or chief information officers, of world-renowned healthcare organizations. And they are also cancer survivors. So this game is going to be a good old-fashioned game of trivia where I read you a true fact, okay? True fact, not fake news, about either Chris or Ed. And you just need to guess who I'm describing. Sound good?
Sounds great. Okay. So how do I know if I win, Sarah? Or I should, excuse me, let me rephrase that. How do I know when I win, Sarah?
Okay, sorry. I just need to go puke a little bit and I'll be right back. In my household, we are big baseball fans. So three strikes, you're out, Elliot. If you miss three trivia facts, then the game ends, game over. Pew, 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 pew. And the loser, i.e. you, needs to record a original, not AI generated, love sonnet in honor of your amazing, beautiful, talented, witty, tall co-host and post it on LinkedIn for Valentine's Day.
Stop it. I'm not that tall. Does the sonnet have to be an iambic pentameter?
Well, I think William would expect that, yes.
Oh, geez. Okay. Well, that's going to be hard for you to do.
Go back to high school English.
I was trained as a Shakespearean actor, so this is going
to
be...
I can't wait for you to romance me, right? To woo me online. All right, enough of the banter. Let's get down to business, all right? You ready for your trivia question?
Let's do this!
All right. This individual held leadership positions at Surescripts, MinuteClinic, and United Health Group, contributing significantly to healthcare IT. No Googling.
I'm not Googling. That's Chris. Chris Ross.
Ding, 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 ding. You are correct. Yes. Good job.
Well on my way.
All right. Second question. He served as chairman of the board of the eHealth Initiative and was on the boards of directors for HIMSS and Zipnosis, influencing healthcare IT policies and practices.
That's Ed. No, that's Chris.
That is Chris.
Oh, no.
All right,
this
that's
going to go so
strike,
fast.
Wilson. All right, next up. He authored healthcare bestsellers, including Voices of Innovation and Healthcare Digital Transformation.
Okay, that's Ed Marks. That I know because I ding, have ding, a ding, signed ding, ding. Copy of that.
Oh, nice. Okay. Hi, Roland. I like it. Okay. Yes, that is Ed. You are correct. Okay, next trivia bit. He was named HIMSS Chime CIO of the Year in 2013 and has been recognized by CIO and Computer World as one of the top 100 leaders.
I feel like this is a trick question. It could have been both. I'm going to go with Ed Marks.
You are correct. Ding, 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 ding,
yes.
Ding. Nice job, Elliot, although I'm not really rooting for you. I'm just trying to be kind. All right. He serves as a senior advisor for venture capital firm Insight Partners, guiding investments in healthcare technology.
That's also Ed.
That is Chris. Yeah.
See, I thought that would be Ed because Chris is just coming off of his tour and wouldn't have been be able to be in that position.
Still waters run deep, Elliot.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so that's two strikes. Can't have any more strikes or you lose, okay? Just reminding you, okay?
How many questions have we had so far?
I can't remember.
That's
I mean,
not right.
Don't maybe like six?
I'm trying to back into how many each of them have had.
Okay, I'll throw you a bone here and give you an easy one, all right?
Okay.
He co-founded Open Arms Medical Clinic to serve indigenous Maasai tribes in remote Tanzania, reflecting his dedication to global health.
That was Ed.
Absolutely. Ding, 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 ding. Good job. Okay, next question. His career includes roles such as Global Chief Digital Officer for Tech Mahindra Health and Life Sciences, showcasing his international impact on healthcare IT.
That's Chris.
That's
no!
It's kind of a trick question because Chris also has a very strong international presence.
International presence.
IT. You're right.
That's not fair. That's
Oh, it's absolutely fair.
I feel like it should be a 50-50 split. If you get 51%.
As you said, you are the Shakespearean theater major, so you are best suited to, you know, romance me. Although I do, I have to say, I really hope you do it from a balcony dressed as Juliet.
I, at the very least, I will wear one of my daughter's heart hairbands.
Headbands?
Yes.
You heard it here first, folks. Sounds fantastic, Elliot.
I'll wear Micah's Elsa wig and stand out from my porch.
Let it go.
From my deck.
Let it go. You lost the game of trivia. But not your dignity.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I cannot.
No, that was beautiful. That was beautiful.
Not as beautiful as the sound of a fart.
Well, listeners, take a listen on Valentine's Day for when my ode to Sarah.
It's number one on the Billboard charts.
That's right. It's number one on the Billboard charts.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, next up, we have the men, the myth, the legends, Chris and Ed. We'll be right back.
Medicine is a performance. Always has been. You walk into the room, make eye contact, nod at the right moments, soften the brow just enough to say, I hear you, while simultaneously mentally prioritizing which soap notes are getting copy-pasted today. But let's be honest, some days, your body is there, but your soul is buffering. That's why there's Doc Puppet, the only FDA-adjacent medical-grade illusion that allows you to be everywhere at once. A highly trained movement actor wears the Doc Puppet mask, a high-fidelity, digital replica of your face, streaming your expressions in real time. They don't speak. They don't diagnose. They just sit, nod, and breathe in a way that make patients feel seen. And science backs it up. Studies show patients respond more positively to expressive, engaged body language, something a freshly trained Juilliard grad does far better than a sleep-deprived hospitalist on an hour 27 of call. And the best part? It costs less than installing cameras and screens in every room while finally giving movement actors steady work in their craft. The Doc Puppet headband ensures your gaze stays locked in, so even when you're rage-clicking through EMR tabs, your digital face is still giving active listening. Surgical mode lets you scrub in virtually while your Doc Puppet presence reassures families in the waiting room. No more post-op debriefs done over speakerphone like a ransom call. Posture Perfect ensures your assigned movement actor mirrors your natural bedside manner, whether you're a thoughtful, steeple fingers kind of doc or a dramatic forehead rub specialist. Exclusive for listeners of Tech It to the Limit, upgrade to Doc Puppet Premium and get Continuity Sync, because the only thing more unsettling than a masked actor imitating you is swapping them out mid-season. Use promo code TechItPuppet15 at checkout for 15% off your first year of Doc Puppet Premium. Doc Puppet is not a replacement for actual patient interaction. Legal consider your Hippocratic Oath. May cause existential questioning, spontaneous method acting, and creeping sense that you've been replaced. Do not use while making major life choices. If this feels dystopian, just remember, it was cheaper than hiring a scribe. Doc Puppet. Because if you have to fake being present, you might as well do it well.
Hard folk and gentle folk, today we welcome Chris Ross, one of our two guests and the ultimate comeback kid of healthcare IT. As the Chief Information Officer at Mayo Clinic from 2012 to 2024, Chris guided the number one hospital in the world through a massive electronic health record convergence spanning 5 years, 4 states, and literally thousands of surgeons who had to agree on which orders to include in their post-operative order sets. Yikes. Not content with toppling just one Goliath, Chris also orchestrated Mayo's 10-year strategic partnership with Google, focusing on cloud computing and artificial intelligence to enhance patient care and accelerate medical research. Thanks to Chris, Rochester, Minnesota, my hometown, now has a Google brick and mortar office and is officially cool. But Chris's most profound insights stem from his personal journey as a two-time stage 3 colorectal cancer survivor, teaming up with his close friend, our other guest on Tech at the Limit today, Ed Marks, former CIO of Cleveland Clinic. Together, they have penned Diagnosed, an insider's guide for your healthcare journey. This book is more than a guide. It's an example of servant leadership at its finest, with all author royalties supporting cancer research at Mayo Clinic Comprehensive Cancer Center. Please join us as we delve into Chris and Ed's journey from the boardroom to the recovery room and back, exploring how their experiences are guiding patients and executives worldwide. Excited to have you on the show, Chris.
And it's my great pleasure to reintroduce Ed Marks. Listeners, buckle up, because today we are teching it to the limit one more time. That's right, back by popular demand, well, at least our demand, is the one and only unstoppable and friend of the pod, Ed Marks. Now, if you don't know Ed, first of all, where have you been? Second, let me catch you up. The man's career reads like a greatest hits album, from mopping clinic floors at 16 to running the digital strategy at some of the biggest health systems in the country. Cleveland Clinic, University Hospitals, Texas Health Resources. Ed has done it all. And somewhere in between, he found time to be combat medic, an army officer, a best-selling author, a global speaker, a podcaster, a consultant, a triathlete for Team USA. And I think he'd be the first to say, most importantly, a husband, father, and grandfather. I mean, I'm exhausted just reading that, Ed. Are you sure you're not secretly some kind of cyborg? So last time Ed was on the show, we talked about the holy trinity of healthcare transformation, clinical, business, and digital, coming together to actually save lives. And if that sounds like a TED Talk in the making, you'd be right, because Ed's been out there lighting up stages, coaching leaders, and frankly, making the rest of us feel like we need to get our act together. Welcome back to the pod, Ed.
And thank you so much for having me again. What a joy, and especially alongside my brother, Chris. So excited. Thank you.
Wonderful to have you here.
We always kick off our show, as you know, Ed, with a little easy on-ramp to the conversation. So I'm going to invite Chris to share his favorite dad joke, and then, Ed, I'll invite you to do the same. So, Chris, take it away, please.
So my friend took me out to his tool shed, and he pointed at a ladder, and he said, "That's my step ladder. I never really knew my real ladder."
That's amazing. As someone who doesn't really need a stepladder, that's a fantastic joke coming from you, Chris.
That's so good. You didn't even have to reach for that one.
Oh. Nice.
All right. How about you, Ed? That's a difficult one to top.
It is. I can never top anything Chris does. I just like to get halfway there, and maybe this one will do it. What do you call a fake noodle? A fake noodle. It's an impasta.
That's fantastic. As someone who makes a lot of noodles in this stage in her life with a six-year-old in the house, mm-hmm. I'm going to use that for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, Elliot, why don't you take it away with the first serious question of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Ed, Chris, in your book, Diagnosed, you tackle navigating the healthcare system as patients, and from this perspective of two men that have, you know, seen behind the curtain of healthcare, right? So given those different perspectives, who are you writing to and who are you writing for? What do you want them to be taking away from reading this?
You know, we started writing this for our peers because we thought, boy, healthcare is pretty messed up. This is what we learned. We'd like to really share this. And our publisher said, that's fine. And we did do a little companion booklet. But they wanted us to write this to patients because they felt that what we had started with in our first drafts could really speak to patients and that there's lots of people had this problem. And, you know, we wrote it on a bet that it might be helpful for people who supposedly should be experts to fess up and say, it's hard. And that we didn't have all the answers and that things didn't always go perfect, even in the best places on the planet, Mayo and Cleveland. And I think the affirmation for that is I've had a couple of people have come up to me and have been very generous in saying I read the book and it was really meaningful to me as I was helping my mom get through her medical condition, or you know, I had one woman approach me who was, you know, pretty emotional and said, I sometimes felt like I was being selfish or something by advocating for myself, and that you guys made it seem okay. That not only could I advocate for myself, but I really needed to, and that there was nothing wrong with that. So I don't know. I mean, our readership is still reasonably modest. You know, we hope that lots of people read it, but just hearing from the initial people who said, I read it and it resonated with me emotionally, and I picked up some tips. Boy, that's reward enough for writing the book.
Yeah, I've had a lot of the same feedback. And the other thing, too, that was remarkable for Chris and I was we knew intellectually what it was like to be a patient because we've served in healthcare for so many years. I'm sure many of the audience of Tech It to the Limit, you know, are in the same boat. But we realized you don't know what it's like until, man, you're really a patient. And
until you're in we
hope for no one to have that experience, and hopefully they can pick it up from us and then use it, you know, even as healthcare insiders, they can use this book as well, even though it's intended for the public, as Chris mentioned, even for insiders like all of us, that'll be helpful to kind of open eyes a little bit more that it's not as cheery and simple as we might think just because we've been living it, you know, for so many years.
Yeah, I have to say that, even as a patient who's not a cancer survivor, and I hope to never be a cancer patient, I've been listening to it on my commutes and taking a lot of lessons to carry forward as a patient and an advocate for my children, but as an advocate for myself.
Yeah.
So I think that the wisdom you put down there is applicable to anyone throughout their patient journey. So I just want to thank you for that. I've learned a lot from your experiences. I'd like to ask the next question. This is directed at both of you, and you know, whoever wants to answer first, great. Your dual role as both healthcare IT leaders and cancer survivors, and I know for you, Chris, that was two times, and Ed, you also had a first run-in with a widowmaker, gives you an extraordinary perspective, right? Could you each share a memory from your patient journey that stands out and might resonate with our listenership, particularly one that highlights how technology did or could have played a role in your journeys?
Well, this is Chris. I'll start. So I can think of one really positive one. Like many hospitals now, Mayo has a really great patient portal. And I had all the data I wanted through my whole journey. I could see all my appointments, all my tests, all my everything. And, you know, I hope that that works for people in many settings. There's some places where people are getting care from multiple different healthcare entities, and they're going to have to do some work to stitch it together. Technically, you can combine your records from multiple places, and there, you know, there's ways to make it visible in most places. But it was really great to have everything all in one place. I think a place that showed up that was perhaps negative, and I don't really think it's about tech so much, Sarah and Elliot, it's about the underlying process, is the process for scheduling my oncology visits seemed so bureaucratic, even a place like Mayo, which was, no, you can only schedule one in advance, and you needed to have your blood tests done before you could have chemotherapy. And I understand that. I get it. They don't want to give chemotherapy to somebody who's neutropenic or, you know, their immunity is compromised. But holy smokes, you know, I'm trying to help support my mother and relationships to important people around me. I was trying to work part-time. The idea of not being able to schedule an appointment, you know, three sessions ahead was just agonizing. And I felt like I always had to, it was like Ticketmaster, you know. After I finished my chemotherapy, I'd quick get in line for the next one, you know, and that just seemed nuts. And I understand why there's a whole bunch of underlying processes that make that so, but it presents itself as if it's a technology problem.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't really, it's a process problem, but we can work on that together.
It's like, I think of it as like when you're at a wedding and it's open bar and you go to stand in line at the open bar, and what do? When you get your drink, you go to the back of the line so that you can drink your drink, so that by the time you get to the front of the line again, it's time to have another drink.
Elliot, I got to go to parties with you.
But I mean, but what does that do to you as the patient? Think about that.
Right.
I mean, like,
that's right.
That makes it impossible for you to live your life outside of your cancer journey, because that's the only thing that you can think about doing is managing your life to this process that has taken over so much of your life. And that's got to be disheartening. That's got to be so difficult.
Yeah.
I also want to highlight one of the comments you made, Chris, before we pivot to Ed's answer, is that underlying systemic issues in the system are usually the root causes and process, you know, in a lot of cases, right? And they present themselves as a technology problem or as a people problem, right? But process can be easily masked by other things. And I think that's a really important call out to our listeners, that there isn't a single solution that you could develop that's going to solve a broken process. You have to attack that first before you add in technology.
Well, and even one step more, and this is in our little booklet that accompanies the book, you know, we really believe that that process improvement has been really important in protecting patient safety and making care better. And it's been a multi-decade attempt to get to the quadruple aim and managing all those pieces. But now it's time for us to pivot to delivering healthcare as customer-focused, patient-focused products and services, and not as a set of interlinked processes. The reason why that oncology example exists is because one department does one thing and they have a rule that says this, and there's a safety reason behind it. That's cool. Let's not abandon that. But let's think about healthcare as being delivered as patient services oriented around their journey map, and not so much about each department do their own thing. And then hope like heck that it all aligns and that someone can magically navigate through it.
You know, Ed, I'm going to ask you this question. As Chris was describing his experience, actually the positive experience of being able to collect a lot of his information through the patient portal, I'm curious your perspective, because I imagine you felt something similar in your journey. Do you think that the way that that data is presented to patients is truly meaningful to them? Or do you think that you were able to absorb it more because of your experience with healthcare, you know, more broadly, that, you know, I know what this is supposed to look like because I've seen 1,000 of these things before?
I think we're getting better. We're trying to catch up to consumerism and other industries, Elliot. So the good thing is we at least got the information flowing now. But yeah, is there a next level we can go? Like a credit score. Like if you used to tell people, hey, your credit score is 600, it's like, okay, out of what's a range like 1 to 850, it's kind of weird. But now, like at my bank, on my portal, it shows you like red, yellow, green. Mm. And I know, 709 is good or whatever the number might be. And there's a red, yellow, green, and it's easy to understand. I think we're getting better at it. The good news, though, is at least we're now presenting it. And that was one of my positive experiences. You know, I found out that I was clear of cancer from my app because we made a decision to say, as soon as the results are recorded, we're releasing it. In the old days, we'd have to have a clinician needs to review it first and all this kind of bureaucracy. And let's say the clinician's busy. It could be another 12 hours. It could be another weekend. But I found out immediately. But to my physician's credit, I will say this. He called me about 3 seconds later. So that was kind of cool, the timing on all that. But I think your point is correct. We need to do a little bit more to make the data more understandable. And I have a wife that's a clinician. And so, you know, she could help me with all this interpretation. But yeah, the average consumer would still have a hard time.
Yeah.
I want to give Ed the opportunity to share a personal story about how technology did or maybe could have played a role in your journey.
Yeah, I definitely have one just really quick off my mind. You know, when I had this heart attack, now I think this is 2018, super progressive there, probably average today, but there's still some health systems that aren't quite there yet. And I just encourage everyone to get there. Right. The reason I had this remarkable recovery was because of technology. So they found out, they diagnosed me. They were having trouble diagnosing me, but we happen to have one of these EKG cards, right? That's Bluetooth to the iPhone. And in 30 seconds, they sent it to the waiting hospital as part of a race. So they went to a designated race hospital. And they immediately knew, oh, that's a Widowmaker. Bring him in stat. They did. I got door to balloon time, 30 minutes. Okay, would not have happened without technology. They would have still been guessing and maybe let me go. And then my recovery was similarly remarkable because of technology, because they adopted all these Bluetooth capabilities. They were looking at my results, my all the key indicators all the time, was presenting all the time. And so they updated my meds on a daily basis for the first couple of weeks. Normally, you come back for a post-visit, you know, a couple of weeks later, they do one heart rate, you know, check, and then make a decision. I got meds right away, adjusted until it was pretty clear on my direction. And as a result, again, thanks to technology, great clinicians, and I think there's a spiritual element there as well. The thing I think we still can work on, Elliot brought up one. Another one might be, we're really good at the preparation for care, like with our portals. But once the care happens, there's a lot more questions. And the portals, for the most part, just aren't set up yet to answer those questions, right? We can give the results. We can get you prepared, like do this, you know, in preparation for your surgery, things like that. But afterwards, I had a prostate cancer. So I had a prostatectomy and I had to carry, I forget what I called them, but I had names for these bags, right? That collected my urine for a while. And so I had some issues, even my wife being a clinician, we had some issues like, what do we do? And there was no way, there should have been videos as an example on the portal. Like, hey, if you see this color, click here. If you see this, I don't want to get too graphic, you know, click here. And there's a little video explainer saying, hey, it's no big deal. This is very natural. Or, hey, this is a bigger deal, but here's what you can do to clean. Or here, that's a pretty big deal. You probably should call your doc. You know, I think we're still missing that post-care capabilities within many portals.
And then you humanize it. And then you also have videos about whose house you should throw it at if you're really in a neighborly dispute.
Oh, man.
So I learned I should go to parties with Elliot and not tick him off if I'm his neighbor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you don't step on his grass.
Punk.
My arsenal of colostomy bags.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's definitely an opportunity, I think, for some large language models to play a role there in what you're describing, Ed, because have someone who used to work in patient education, I understand the cost of making those little videos. When you're working in a field where evidence-based medicine is critical and consistent messaging to the patient is critical, it takes a long time to get that content created and approved, and then to keep it current, right? Just like deploying an AI model, like who's watching it after we send it out in the wild, right? So I do think that there's a much more viable use solution would be like a chatbot, right? Where you can say like, I'm having this. Yeah, exactly. What should I do here? Do I need to call the doc or am I good, right? But I love where you're going with that. I think visuals are always really helpful, especially for our folks who have lower health literacy.
I think the other thing that may be useful, and I don't want to take us on a tangent, but this is something that I've been talking about as Ed and I've been talking more and more about this book, is like some of this is around reframing people's expectations. And it's why we put such an effort in the book to not just say, well, just wait around until the technologists fix stuff, because we're never going to like, quote, fix things to the level it's going to be okay. If people think of like a cancer journey as being like getting on an airplane and arriving on time and getting off the plane and then I'm done, they're going to be disappointed, because a cancer journey is more like a tourist trip to Malaysia, Thailand, and India. And, you know, your planes are going to be slow, and you're going to get off the plane. It'll be a nice flight. And then it's like, what the heck? Where do I go get a taxi? And then you're on the streets of Bangkok, and oh my God, I don't know what to do here. This is like, this place is insane. But, you know, it's Bangkok and it works fine. And, it, you know, people live there very happily. But I think the reframing is, there's a limit to how much we can package and make healthcare as simple as ordering a meal in a restaurant or depositing a check in the bank or buying something on Amazon or taking a trip someplace. We have to reframe it that healthcare is going to be like a multi-site vacation in Asia where you don't speak the local language and the environment is disorienting and there will be discontinuities. You know, God help us. Now we've got Google. When I travel around the world, I can get anywhere and I can find anything. And you know what? Most cities have Uber and I'm good to go. I think no matter how perfect the processes are and how perfect the technologies are, we're still going to have that problem of sort of mass disorientation and having to sort of steel yourself for the journey and needing to own the journey yourself. You know, there aren't any packaged tours through a serious health condition. It's kind of a make your own adventure. But that isn't to say we shouldn't fix things, but I do think people need to be prepared for what's ahead and to be frustrated about the things that they should be, and we should provide them with tools to cope with the inevitable, I don't speak the language, I don't know what that roadside means, I don't know where I am, I don't know how to find my way to my hotel, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry to get on my soapbox a little bit, but I think that's kind of core to what we should be thinking about next.
Well, I think that's great, and I love that analogy. I think maybe there's some opportunity for when you're setting those expectations that it's not going to be a straight shot. It's not going to be a straight line. It is going to be a winding journey. Mm-hmm. I still think that when we're thinking about technology and how we apply it thoughtfully to that, it should make that winding journey a better experience throughout. But not necessarily, Absolutely. It's not necessarily going to change the direction, but it should make that experience a better one throughout. So, Agreed. Reflecting on your experiences as a patient, can you give us, I don't know, 2-3 practical ways that healthcare executives can ensure that technologies that they adopt genuinely improve patient care or outcomes or experience? And what kind of pitfalls along those journeys would you advise those executives to avoid? I'm going to start with Ed.
Yeah. So in that booklet that we've been referencing called How to Improve the Patient Experience. So again, Chris mentioned it earlier. It came out of the work of Diagnose the Book for the Consumers. Hey, we learned a few things from many of our peers on things that we can do to be better. And one of them is pretty simple. Actually, many of them are pretty simple, but we just don't do them. And one is include the patient. It's so obvious, right? When you hear the answer, include the patient in everything you can do. So this can be, you're working on the portal. You're always making updates to your portal. Is there a patient that's involved in that committee? So there's probably a committee that's in charge of the portal and new enhancements, things like that. And it's typically a bunch of healthcare people like ourselves. And again, we don't have that perspective as patients as much as we think we might intellectually. We don't until we've actually lived something pretty traumatic. So include them in your portal design, any design, your website, whatever it might be, that in the ways that you touch your virtual care, how you set it up, how you operate it. Ask a patient. They're probably going to tell you something that you don't know. Another way of doing that is invite speakers that are patients into all of your meetings. So this gets more at the cultural issue and the values of the particular organization. So this is pretty easy to do. And again, most hospitals have a sort of a patient advocate, and you can go to them and ask them, hey, are there some volunteers? If you have nothing like that, because I know not all hospitals have the same sort of structure, you can always just ask patients themselves. So I used to ask doctors, hey, do you have some patient who's, hey, I need a patient that's really technically savvy and one that's not technically savvy at all. So that's what I did for a while until I went to a hospital that had something more formalized. So at all of our meetings, we would have a patient speak first. There is nothing more valuable to me than having a patient speak at your meetings because they get tired of Ed speaking and they want to hear someone else. And it's always interesting to hear a patient's perspective that reinforces the value of technology and how it may have saved their life or improved their experience. And I found that to be incredibly powerful. So those are two I could go on forever, but I won't. They'll have to buy the book. Those are two examples of how you can, you know, get the voice of the patient more involved and help CIOs leverage technology better, because they're going to be the best ones to tell you how to do it.
Anyway, it's almost like we teed you up for that, Ed.
I was ready.
That's awesome.
Chris, what do you think?
Ed's literally written the book with a whole series of digital transformation books.
What about your advice, Chris? What advice would you give, practical advice, would you give healthcare executives when it comes to the integrating technology into the patient experience?
Well, probably Ed said it very clearly. I'd supplement it maybe by what we were discussing earlier, which is think about patient-centric pathways that then define services and products the way they want to consume it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of focus over the last few years of, you know, what if Disney ran our hospitals? Wouldn't everything be better? And bringing in perspectives from other industries, either by consultants or by leaders who come from other industries. And I think there's value in that. But I think many of the answers are right in front of us if we have the courage to question the underlying process, to say, why are we doing this? Is it really important that we do it this way? Or can we bend our processes without breaking them in order to wrap them around a patient-centric journey? So I guess I'm probably a fan of reform from within, and, you know, in baseball analogy, hitting singles and stealing bases rather than trying to swing for the fences every time at bat. I love big ideas. They're great, but I worship small ideas.
That's good stuff right there.
That is like soundbite,
yeah,
right there.
That's wisdom. That's wisdom speaking right there.
That's yeah, right. Yeah. That's coming up on our wise nugget segment at the end of the show.
Dibs.
Ah, no. I already said it, man. No, I love big ideas, but I worship. What was it? I worship small ideas.
Yeah,
that's what I said. You could substitute with practical ideas too, but you know, just. The answers are in front of us if we just have the courage to do them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, the experiments that we've done in healthcare where we brought in people, and I was a big advocate for it. We brought in people from the outside, from other industries that were very consumer oriented. I'm not going to mention the industries or the people because they're lovely people. A lot of them left pretty quick. That's when I sort of changed my thinking along following Chris, because I was the big proponent of let's bring these people in and they're so smart in these other industries, and they just struggled a little bit. And so I agree with Chris, like we can learn from the other, we have to learn from the other industries, but we can bring them in singles and doubles, stealing bases, as opposed to waiting for someone to hit that grand slam. So Chris is right on. So it's very profound.
Well, you're right, Ed. I think we have learned from other industries that it's really important and valid to look at the consumer, even though whoever is on the manufacturing line or the product invention line or the service organization or the parts and warranty area, they all get jittery.
Yeah.
But in fact, what we've learned from other industries is you can and should start with what does the customer want and then deliver to that relentlessly. Yeah.
So one of the themes in Diagnosed is patient empowerment. From the patient's perspective, what role does technology have in fostering that empowerment? And what innovations do you think we still need to develop? We'll start with Chris on this one.
Well, I kind of gave my answer earlier to it. I think the portal is the great leveler. It's a really great thing if you can understand it. I think we should supplement it, and this is a place where I am excited about big ideas like application of generative models. I think I'm a reasonably intelligent, well-informed, you know, kind of consumer, but I would be confronted with something in my medical record, and I would say, the what? I have no idea what this means. And if I could have some technology that would say, what does ileus mean? And what does an elevated sodium level mean in this context? That would be awesome, because we're never going to have enough physician and other clinician support time to answer all my questions. I think portals are fantastic, access to data, integration of data. It's fantastic. We did not have this 15, 10 years ago. Now we do. But I'm so excited about once we can add explainers.
I love that example. Really ties into some of the root needs of the customer that we still haven't addressed, which is just like understanding what our care teams are telling us in medical jargon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't fault them for that. They work really hard to become doctors and nurses, and that's the language of their trade. And I don't want to ask any more for any more computing power from those individuals, right? Technology can absolutely supplement them in a really helpful way to meet our patients' needs that quite frankly, they've been around since humankind.
Yeah, I was going to say the dawn of time, but like,
the dawn of time.
But I'm wondering, you mentioned something to me earlier, or you mentioned something generally earlier, Chris, about finding out what the customer wants and then relentlessly pursuing that. And I wonder, why does the consumer need to ask for it to be explained? And why can't that be translated for them before it even gets to them, so that they can see side by side right from the jump what the clinician said? And, you know, here's what that it means in a culturally sensitive manner, in plain language that can be understood by that patient without having to ask for that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And most of the time we can achieve that. I'm sympathetic with what Sarah was saying about what we ask of clinicians. You know, they use highly scientific, precise language for a reason, and it's because they're trying to explain things with precision and accuracy in a way that's not misleading, and it's not, well, there's a lump in your breast. Well, no, wait a second.
Right.
What kind of tumor and what size? And right. So there's language to describe something. So I don't think we want to dumb down medicine too much. I think we also need to understand, you know, I'm going to go to Japan in March. I don't expect all the street signs to be in English. I know it's going to be in Japanese. And I expect that I'm going to have to put in some work to understand it. And that's okay. And we can reframe that. But I love pointing my Google app at road signs and having it translate them in real time. It's a total game changer, right? So I think we can, with really smart technology, have the best of both worlds. We can have precision. We can have authenticity. We don't have to compromise and dumb things down, but we can explain complicated ideas in a way that most right. people can learn pretty well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't mean to say to dumb things down, but certainly.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to put words in your mouth either, Elliot.
Okay.
I think we're on the same page in that regard.
I agree.
It's a struggle to get it right, isn't it?
It is.
I wanna just, before we pivot to Ed, I wanna just call out something that I read in the book, which is part of Ed's personal story. And I think this is a central theme throughout the entire book, which is you need to participate in your own rescue, right? And so it's putting a piece of the onus on the patient, right? And you're not just saying, hey, this is your responsibility, you got to participate. You're saying, okay, these are all the different ways that you can participate based on how you approach your own values and what you define health to be, and you know how you engage with the world, right? So I found that to be incredibly empowering, because you two are close friends, yet you're different individuals, and you bring unique perspectives to your healthcare journey. But yeah, I just appreciate that you keep coming back to that, Chris. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is everyone's problem to solve, right? It's the care team has responsibility to the patient. We in the technology space have responsibility to the care team and the patient. And then the patient has responsibility to themselves and their own well-being and their own journey. So thank you for kind of bringing together that triad, right?
Well, it's a four-legged stool, and I'm going to toss it over to my friend Ed, because he's been the strong voice on this. It's also, you need it to have a village of supporters is another idea that's central to the book, and you can't do this alone. So I don't know if that's where you guys want to go, but that's yeah. such a huge theme, and Ed has been such a fantastic advocate for that and has so many great ideas that he put in the book around how to do it.
Yeah, when you asked the original question, Sarah, and Chris gave a great answer on the tech part of it, my immediate thoughts went to the self and the concept of resilience and the concept of village, and also how can we leverage technology on the preventative side so that it's not, you know, right now, I think the average person uses a portal 2 to 3 times a year, right? It's very episodic. Is there anything we can do that gets them more engaged with the portal, much like we might be in other industries, and uses it a lot more because it's fun, you know, the whole concept of gamification. I know it's been tried and people are still working on it, but if we can get people more interested and engaged in their own healthcare and being more proactive, you know, both on mental care and as well as physical care, I think that would go a long way overall. And so, but how do you do it? That's the big question on how you do it. But I think that's a piece that's missing in a lot of the tech. When we talk about tech and experience, is sort of these proactive, preventative type things. And to Chris's commentary, some of it is around this concept of a village. Like, do we encourage people to have strong social networks? We don't, or I haven't seen it. I don't think it's common that we do that. But yet the research shows that when someone has a strong support system, could be family, could be neighbors, could be a user group, you know, patients like me, that they tend to do better and or have a better experience. So whatever we can do to kind of help people think about those sort of things, right? Because it's not all about, as important as it is, it's not all the medicine, it's not all the surgical processes. It's really this broader way of looking at patient experience. So if we can leverage tech somehow to encourage a village, to encourage, you know, self-care, to encourage the ownership of your healthcare, to encourage the development of resilience, I think it'll go a long way.
It's interesting. It's like, as you were speaking about that, Ed, I was thinking about social media. And like in its, the ideal form of it, right, is supposed to do exactly that, right? But the social media that has taken flight has done nothing but isolate us.
Interesting.
And I just kind of just kept going on a loop as you were describing that, because I think you're right around those social structures and generally what we do in social spaces, at least from a technology perspective, is oftentimes put ourselves in smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller boxes online.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I really do appreciate the sort of the hopefulness. And I mean, this might be more indicative of my personality as an ESTJ, the whole proactive engagement and the chance for, you know, favors the prepared mind kind of approach to wellness. And as I was listening to the book, I thought, okay, what can I do now to get ready for when this inevitably happens to someone I love or to me? Right? Because that's life, right? And so I do appreciate this sort of pre-planning that one can engage in, even if it's just sort of reflecting on it and making a general sketch of like, who is my village and what can I do proactively to kind of curate that now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to wait for a crisis, right? And then have then, you know, kind of be helter skelter. It's very hard. So that's why, yeah, the book is full of ideas, practical steps people can take just to prepare. Because if it's not you, and hopefully it's not you, but it's going to be your neighbor, it's going to be a family member that needs someone. Mm-hmm. And in the book, you'll find a lot of great ideas. And you're right that we tried to speak to a broad audience. We know not everyone is the same. And so we did a lot of focus groups to try to make sure we gathered a diversity of opinions and a diversity of thought. And so we offer up a lot of different ideas. And one of them is the village, but there's different ways to approach the village. Chris's village, whom I've been blessed to interact with, is pretty cool. And it's different. Chris went about it differently than I did. So yeah, read the book. Lots of great ideas on how to create a village, whether it's Chris type village or Ed type village or other types that we go through. But yeah, there's definitely steps you want to take now, to your point, in order to prepare for that time.
You know, this is the perfect segue to one of the last things we wanted to ask you about, which is, so thank you for that, Ed. We like to, when we can, leave our listeners with a call to action, you know, something that they can take away and do. If you could leave our listeners with some kind of call to action on making the patient experience better through digital technology, what would that be?
So I'll just repeat one of the ones I mentioned already, because it doesn't cost anything. It's quite simple to do, but I would say only 15% of hospitals do this, and that's get the patient involved directly. Again, they could be on your governance steering committee. They can be on your portal committee, whatever you call it, your digital health committee, your times that you get together with town halls to be a speaker. Not a one-time event, all the time. It'll change a lot of things, not just the technology and making sure that you're meeting the patient need, but it's going to change the heart of everyone involved and get them more patient-centric and empathetic. Chris?
I totally get it. So I go back to something I said before and maybe add to it the idea of, you know, love the bold, huge idea, but worship the small, practical idea. And then I would also say, small practical ideas are only useful if they're aimed in a direction. You know, if they're all pulling in different directions, you'll just get this diffuse mass. You want laser light and not diffuse light. So I'd say measure what matters. And in this particular instance, you know, it's the quadruple aim is as good as any, right? It talks about improving quality, improving customer satisfaction, improving population health, and improving patient satisfaction. Provider satisfaction. So there you go. I mean, what better guideposts do we need than that? There's no need to invent anything new in this particular instance. It's great. So let's go for it. But let's make sure we put some relentless measures and see, are we really moving in those directions? Are we moving the needle? And if we are, keep doing the same thing.
Thank you both so much for being our guest tonight. It was a true honor to have you both on the show. And we will absolutely post the link to the book, the audiobook, and the companion patient experience resource that comes along with the book in our show notes. I want to thank you both for your time and your insights. And it's always a pleasure to connect with you both. Thank you.
True pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you also.
All right.
And that's our awkward time.
Welcome back to Tech It to the Limit, folks. You know, getting all of this amazing content ready to go for season 3 has gotten me a little famished. I'm a little hungry. I need something to snack on. I could really go for some crispy Wise nuggets. Sarah, can you serve up some Wise nuggets that you might have gotten from that conversation we had with Ed and Chris?
Why, absolutely. I have them on a silver platter right here, hot and steaming, with your choice of sauces. So my first Wise nug there were so many, right? There always are, but I loved speaking to these two guys because they have very different approaches to leadership and storytelling, but they have shared experience, shared expertise, and it was just super fun talking to them. So my first nugget is from Chris, and then I'll have one from Ed because I'm all about the equity, right? I love when Chris said that process problems often present themselves as technology problems. I mean, preach, yeah. My man. Like, you and I know
Hallelujah. This,
that you're never going to be successful with technology unless you first start with the process behind it. So, you know, to elaborate on that a bit, Chris reminded us that we need to be totally blowing up the process, the status quo, and thinking about redesigning our processes in healthcare that are actually oriented around the patient and the patient journey and the problems that the patient faces or their needs and wants and desires, right? Instead of what we have now, which is as a system, we're facing these problems related to access and scheduling and protocols and blah, 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 that lead to fragmentation and dehumanization in healthcare. And also like expensive tech, right? Like too deep of a tech stack. So I'll just end with a Chris quote again. He said, many of the answers are right in front of us if we have the courage to question the status quo. And I love that. It's like, speak up, raise your hand in class. If you think that the process sucks, you're probably not the only one in the room, right? But hopefully you have the courage to say so and start from scratch.
Yeah, well, that does take courage, right? I mean, that is a courageous thing to do to stand up in your peers, especially if you're a ladder climber or if you are insecure.
Present.
are insecure in
your position of power.
Thank you. Or yeah. You have imposter syndrome. That's a courageous thing to do, to speak up.
Also present.
yeah, no, right? I mean, absolutely. But that wasn't it. I am not satisfied. That couldn't possibly be the only nugget you're serving me.
No, of course. I've got my Ed Marks nugget hot and ready for you. Okay. I love that he really challenged our listeners to involve patients in design. And we've had other guests that talked about that, but he gave some very specific tactics that you can deploy. Again, if you're bold, if you're courageous, if you're innovative, and you don't take no for an answer, which is Ed Marks, right? So start with inviting them to your meetings, right? You serve patients every day. They're your primary customer. Don't tell me that you don't have access to the people who are using your products and services, right? Invite them to your meetings. And then he said, have them start the meeting, right? Let's remember why we're all here. And then also include balance in terms of their technology, their digital literacy. Invite savvy users and unsavvy ones to the table, whether it's a design meeting or a strategy meeting or what have you, right? It's so simple, but yet it's against the grain. It's bold. I love it. And, you know, again, if you say you can't find patients to join your meetings, you're not trying hard enough.
100%. And not only is it bold, which people like, it's also free, like... Or at the very least, inexpensive.
It's values first as well, right?
Right. To go to your patient advocacy group and say, hey, do you have a mechanism that to incorporate patient feedback? We'd like to incorporate them into this process. You will have patients that will volunteer to do that. Right. And so it's simple, it's inexpensive, but highly impactful. So tasty nuggets. Thank you, Sarah.
I am stuffed. But I have some more on the plate. I'm going to just pass it through the screen to you if you want to grab it. Carefully talk.
Ow! Ooh, burns. I do also have a couple of nuggets. Clearly, I am not a fan of equity because both of my nuggets came from Chris this time around, not one of each. You're so kind that way. But I get drawn to these amazing quotes, and Chris was dropping them like they were hot potatoes. I'm going to start with this one from Chris. It was so good. There aren't any package tours through a serious health condition. He described a cancer journey as being like a 3-country tour of Asia where you don't know the local language, you don't know the local customs. It can be incredibly disorienting just stepping off of the initial, coming off the initial flight. And it's definitely going to have discontinuities, which was not a word I'd ever heard spoken out loud. But I thought that analogy was really great. It's more of a choose your own adventure than a planned, I'm going to take off here, plane ride, land here, get off, be at my destination. It's a winding path that the point that I was trying to make was to steel yourself for the journey on it. Because there is a limit to how simple we are going to be able to make that journey, even with technology. And he did go on to kind of use that Google Translate analogy to say that we should be able to provide tools to help patients cope with those discontinuities that will inevitably arise. But it is incumbent upon the patients to self-advocate and take ownership of their journey, which I thought was really important.
One micro nugget to piggyback like a barnacle on top of your super nugget. I think it's less like a choose your own adventure right now, current state, I think ideal state, that's what patients are offered, that option.
Right now it's more of an escape room.
It's like an escape room. It's actually more like the Hunger Games, right? Where like it's coming at you and you're like, whoa, you're living, right? And teeth. And then here comes some acid rain. I wasn't expecting that.
And now they want to pre-op for it.
Yeah, exactly. Here. Anyway, you get the point. Someone steals your weapons. You're starving, like all these things. So I just, you know, I think the ideal state is we get to where patients are in the driver's seat, right? And right now there's some master of ceremonies, game master. What was the name of that guy from the book? I can't remember.
The game master. It had to have been the game master.
We'll find out from the Hunger Games fans that listen to our show. But he like controlled
everything,
the world that they operated in, right? Yeah. And that's kind of the way it feels to patients these days.
Sometimes. All right. My other nugget, also from Chris, and this, I mean, we even acknowledged it in the moment. He had this great line, "I love big ideas, but I worship small ideas." Talk about a mic drop moment. I think I really literally did knock mine over in the moment. And then, you know, for the sports fans among us present in baseball.
What?
I mean,
this is a serious podcast. Very serious,
so serious. In baseball analogy, he was talking about hitting singles and stealing bases rather than swinging for the fences are what's going to garner you the most good. And I love this reminder to ourselves that incremental or continuous process improvement methods, why they're so effective is because you can iterate on change so much faster than you can plan for a massive change that is going to take all this preparation that may not even end up working the way that you hope it to work in the end, right? So doing small...
And you limit the downside risk.
And you do limit the downside risk. And it's also easier to get people to buy into small incremental changes over time, right? You put a toad or a frog in a pot of water and you slowly boil it, it won't try to jump out. But if you know,
we are not advocating for boiling healthcare workers on this
show.
No, not at all.
But you can build on incremental change. So it's like his idea about worshiping small ideas. I just love that sentiment. It also happened to remind me of a project in my MBA course workload way back when I was doing statistics for MBAs, and we were told to choose a data set to develop a predictive model on. And, you know, I was with a bunch of jocks and they were like, let's choose baseball data. And I'm the guy in the group project that does like ends up doing all the work because, you know, that's who you and I are. So here I am doing all of this analytical work, like brute force linear regressions on
brute force linear regressions. Trailer tag.
on baseball data. Turns out though, it is not singles and stolen bases as the biggest predictor of wins in baseball. It's actually doubles. So I just did a lot of research back in my MBA days to know that fact.
Chris, if you're listening, Elliot says you're wrong.
So those were my nuggets. I really appreciated both our guests, even though I only pulled nuggets from the one. Ed, if you are listening, I want you to know you hold a special place in my heart. Thank you so much for joining us here on episode 1 of season 3 of Tech at the Limit. We're so glad to be back. We're so glad to have you with us. Thank you so much to Ed Marks and Chris Ross for joining us. The book is called Diagnosed, An Insider's Guide for Your Healthcare Journey. It's available on Amazon and through Mayo Clinic Press. It's also available as an audiobook on Audible or on the Libby app. So check it out. Be sure to get out there and follow us on LinkedIn, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. That's where we are. If you liked us, please leave a comment. Tell a friend. If you didn't like us, tell an enemy. But for goodness sakes, just please tell someone. Sarah, you want to send us off with our season 3 opener, Health Tech Haiku?
It would be my honor. This is a fun one and relates to our guests and their tend book on patient journeys through healthcare. So here we go. Diagnosed shows the way. Health tech and care, hand in hand. Read it. Make a change. And scene.
That was fantastic. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do a sonnet justice based off of the performance that you just gave. I don't think I'm going to be able to do anything that can compare to that. So I might as well just give up now and not do it. What do you
say? Just do your best. We still love you.
Well, listeners, thank you so much. We'll see you next time on Tech It to the Limit.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time. Did I mess that up?
No.
I think I went first instead of second.
No, you're good. It's...
Tech It to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.